Hello, I'm Matt Baume, and welcome to The Sewers of Paris. We're on a podcast search for entertainment that's changed the lives of queer people. On tonight's episode, Will and Grace, Modern Family, Angels in America, Schitt's Creek, and I Am Not Myself Today. I'm speaking this week with Wilson Paulino, who co-hosts the Wilferland podcast with his partner, Fernando. Wilson grew up in a pretty idyllic tourist town in the Dominican Republic, where life was good as long as he didn't talk about who he really was. Quietly closeted, he watched gay couples on American TV shows, living lives that seemed impossibly far away. But meeting his partner helped open a new chapter for them both, one that bears surprising resemblance to some of their favorite fictional queer heroes. We'll have that conversation in a minute. First, a couple quick reminders, starting with a heads up that I've got a video coming your way this weekend about the making of the movie Psycho and the long, strange journey of Norman Bates. Also, I hope you'll join me for weekly live streams over on Twitch every Sunday afternoon at twitch.tv/mattbaume. Last time, we watched some classic episodes of Alfred Hitchcock Presents, and we'll be continuing that this weekend. And if you haven't yet, take a look at my new book about the history of queer characters on sitcoms, Hi Honey, I'm Homo. It's available now wherever books are sold. Go to gaysitcoms.com for details. You can even get a signed, personalized copy, which might make a nice holiday gift if you're the kind of person who likes getting your shopping done early. Big thanks to everybody who makes my work possible on Patreon. Visit patreon.com/mattbaume to support The Sewers of Paris and get patron-exclusive benefits. Now, here's my conversation with Wilson. Well, this week I'm speaking with Wilson Paulino, a YouTuber and now podcaster with his partner. They're the hosts of Wilferland. Thanks so much for joining me.
Thanks so much for having me. It's an honor.
Thank you so much. Well, so what is the entertainment that changed your life?
I'm fearful to sound like basic. I don't know if basic is the word, but basic. But I think Will and Grace is a TV show that has changed or shaped my youth, because I was like 10 years at the time it went out. And I think it was the first piece of media with positive representation of LGBT people that I came across. Mm-hmm. And it really, truly resonated with me.
Can you tell me a little about how you found it? Like, was it, I imagine it was being broadcast. Was it while it was new or was it in reruns?
No, it was new. I actually had I was very lucky in my childhood. My family in general is very open. And I think it's because our upbringing near Puerto Plata, that's a city in the Dominican Republic that it thrives on tourism. Mm-hmm. So I grew up near a lot of different backgrounds of people not only in a tourist city, but in a tourist small neighborhood that had a big hotel and a lot of villas. And I always was in contact with people from the US and Europe. And in that small neighborhood, we'd had a small cable company. It was like a very local, very, very small and very international cable company that had all the channels from USA. So ABC, NBC, CBS, TBS, all those channels were there. So I was very lucky, and I got to see the show right when it started. I waited for seasons when they came out. It was very lucky for me to have that.
Was that the first time that you'd seen queer characters and gay men living their lives?
Yes. And I also, it also coincided with the, I don't know how my parents let me see it. I don't know. I can't remember right now if I watched it like hidden from them, but I do remember that I also watched Sex and the City. And even though it was not like very LGBT centric, it was very open sexually. I had those contacts with TV shows that in a way showed LGBT people living their life or sexuality being lived as something that was not to be ashamed of. So that was a very good, even though it was very adult centric, it was a very good starting point for me.
Can you tell me a little about where you were, like what kind of town you were living in and what your interests were? How old were you?
I was 10 to 12 years old. I would say to be more specific, I think I started seeing the shows around 12 to 13 years. Not exactly the date it came out, but while I was growing up, I was very computer centric. My sister got a computer at 15 years of age, and I was, I think, 13. And I was I grabbed it like it was mine. And I was always on it, consuming media. But I did have a lot of friends that always tried to pull me out of the computer, even though I was very technologically interested, but they wanted to go out. They wanted to be on the beach with me, and because our neighborhood is very near the beach. It as I told you, it was very tourist centric. So we had that, and we always hung out a lot. We played a lot of volleyball. We swam a lot. It was very good. We also Puerto Plata is a mountain city, so we hiked, and we had a cable car. We have a cable car. It's like one of the first ones of the Caribbean, if not the first one, I think. And we also took that a lot. So I have a very good childhood. It was a very friendly, very good people, and very good parents, actually.
I can't imagine you encountered a lot of, I don't know, positive conversations about gay men or LGBTQ people.
No, not at all. It was not a negative perception per se, but it was very silent. It didn't happen. It shouldn't happen. No one mentioned it. And briefly, if something came out, it was like fastly dismissed. Like you could hear like a rumor that someone was LGBT, and another person would say, "I don't think so. I don't think it he's or she's." And the subject would quickly fade away because it was not something that, first, no one was proud of it, and second, no one wanted it to be real, if that makes sense.
When did you start to get an inkling that that might be you?
I think it was with in presence with my cousin. I experimented with him while we were kids, and we discovered each other, like mildly sexual in a friendly teenage way. I think that was it. He actually he for him it was I can assure now that it was mostly experimental, because he's straight man at this age, but for me it was not. I discovered things and emotions that I didn't think they were possible at that age, and with that intensity, and they remain with me.
How did you feel about yourself? Like, were you concerned, or were you like, oh, this is something I gotta fix? Or, you know, like, what did you think that meant for your future?
In my childhood, I didn't think I had to fix anything, but I did feel like I needed to fit in. So I was not trying in any way to shape or form to like minimize or reduce my sexuality. Nonetheless, I was trying and open to try having relationships with women, even though at the time I did not feel like I was bisexual in any way. I was just trying to fit in. I wouldn't say I was trying to suppress my almost homosexual feelings, because I was not. I was enjoying them. I was living them. I tried to have encounters. I consumed the media. Like I was not like reprehending myself because of them. I was just trying to fit in.
So I imagine seeing Will and Grace must have changed how you thought of yourself and what you thought about being gay just completely.
Yes. Will and Grace gave me the chance to see that a gay man could be something more than just a secret, something more than just a secondary comment in a conversation that shouldn't be been happening, that like, shouldn't happen. So Will and Grace actually gave me the strength. Will and Grace gave me the strength to face that I shouldn't be hiding what I was. And throughout my adolescence, I was very mocked in a funny way, like not in a bully way, but by my friends sometimes. Like, that's kind of gay what you're doing, because I never suppressed my behaviors. I was very even though I'm not a lot of I'm not that flamboyant, I had quirks. I had details that people could pick on, and I didn't hide them. I was in theater. I was in a choir. I mean, I lived. I was a very present adolescent. I was an or teenager. I was a very present teenager. I wasn't trying to hide a lot. I'm not gonna lie. I was in the closet. I was in a closet. Nonetheless, I was living as much as I could.
As you got older, and like you said, you weren't trying to hide too much, Were there other places where you started to see characters or maybe hear about themes or stories that you're like, oh, okay, it's not just Will and Grace. There's others like me out there and maybe who are living a life that maybe felt closer to yours. 'Cause I imagine Will and Grace was, you know, that these two guys in New York, there were differences between their lives and yours.
Yes, a lot, a lot. Actually, yes. I think, and I think it's still one of my favorite TV shows of all time. It's 6 Feet Under. In 6 Feet Under, I saw a character that was, even though he was struggling a lot with his sexuality and showing things to his family and all that, I connected a lot with his partner in the TV show. His boyfriend was very open and always tried to be ahead of him in regards of a representation or family meetings or gatherings. So I connected a lot with that. And also I saw in them a model in which they, for example, spoiler alert for a TV show that came out in 2001, but I saw a model of two gay people adopting children. So that was very refreshing to see too. Even though it was not like a happy, a chirpy TV show like Will and Grace, it was an HBO show. 6 Feet Under really got under my skin and showed me more ways in which we could be seen and happy.
What did you anticipate for your future, like either your career or your life or where you're going to live? Like, as you're getting to be an adult, what did you think, you know, or plan on the future being for you?
Well, not to be that guy, but I don't see a lot of steps ahead in the future. I try not to. Especially in these recent years, I'm trying to enjoy the present and short-term plans. And for example, currently I moved with my boyfriend to a city that's outside of the capital of Dominican Republic. We're actually in a mountain city. It's called Constanza. And we moved alone after a lot of years living with roommates. And actually, that's what I'm living right now. It's my goal to live with him, to be in this peaceful city, to be away from the main city or the capital. And also, we recently purchased a piece of land nearby that in the future, whenever we can, we're going to start building there our house there. That's it. I'm trying to live day by day, and that's in regard of my personal life. If we're talking about, let's say, our podcast or politics, I'm trying to create this space with the podcast. It's been ongoing for 4 years now, in which LGBT people can feel safe and feel exactly what I felt when I saw Will and Grace all those years ago, and also motivate people to join politics, even though I'm not exactly in politics myself directly, so people can change in essence, so we can all get married one day, for example, as simple as that. And those are my short-term goals at the moment.
That must have seemed, you know, having a partner and having land and planning your house, that must have seemed unlikely or impossible, you know, when you know you're young and in your 20s and getting out into the world. How different is what you're doing now from what you envisioned it would be?
Totally, totally different. In my early teenage years, I was not thinking at all about being outspoken or YouTube presence or at all being involved in protests. I saw that like away, very away from me, like something that other people did for me or are supposed to do for me. And while I was growing up, while I found my husband that I very much love, and I saw how lucky I was, how many things I had. I thought to myself, this people deserve to have this too. I shouldn't be the only one. Even though I didn't have it on my plans, certainly don't have it like for the rest of my life as planned. I don't think I can stop now. I don't think I should stop now. I think I should be as much help as I can to change the rhetoric or the subject around LGBT people in this country, at least.
How did that get started? Going to protests and being vocal and doing YouTube videos?
I remember, as I mentioned, I created YouTube videos that were not LGBT centric related. Were more funny and things that happen every day and that you could get that you could connect with. But as I also mentioned, I never hide who I was. I'm gay, and you can see it if you look into it. But some people were telling me, like, some gay people approached me, like a few, like three people I remember at the time, and told me, I know that you don't want to be out in your YouTube channel, but that I would be very happy if you would. Or someone tell me once, I know that you hide that you're gay, but it would be awesome if you. And I was like, wait, I don't hide it. And I was very confused by it. And at that moment, I realized that I had to come out in the YouTube channel, and that I had to be more spoken about these issues that I found important, and that I had to maybe touch on subjects that would not like all of people, or will not be like well received, but were things that are part of me. And that's how it started. After that, after I started touching those subjects, the right people approached me, protesters, politicians that were LGBTQ, even though they were in the closet. And I started that journey too.
That must have been a big jump. Like it must have been kind of scary. You must have felt risky to start talking about that.
Yes, especially here where in the Dominican Republic, where for example, I started creating that demographic of people that were following me, and all of a sudden, brands were approaching me, like alcoholic beverage, like deodorants, any kind of brand you could imagine, like wanted to use my platform to promote itself, and I was very lucky that that was happening. But being completely honest, as soon as I started touching the LGBTQ subjects, that for better or for worse, some brands stopped reaching out and maybe others started, but it was fading away. So I knew that I was facing new monsters, but at the end, it was worth it. It was completely worth it because I genuinely realized that I don't want to be associated with someone that doesn't want to be associated with me, and people as normal as me, that like we are LGBT people are normal as much as people deny it, or some people deny it. So for me, it was a lucky thing that happened.
Can you give me an example of the kind of videos that you were making before initially, and then the kind of like topics that you would talk about afterwards? Like, are there particular videos that stick in your mind as being really memorable that you're proud of?
Yes, there's an important video that I really like. It's called Carros Públicos. It's like public transport, and it's simply me detailing the things that happen when you take public transportation in the Dominican Republic. That we have a specific kind of transportation that are like these private cars, in which like six people in with the driver, seven people fit in, and all get in and just drive from point A to point B. But in between those points, a lot of things happen, and it tends to be funny that way. It has English subtitles, if I'm not mistaken, and it's called Carros Públicos. It's on YouTube still. That's the kind of content that I created before I added the LGBTQ subjects, for example.
And then afterwards, what kind of videos, like, give me an example of what you're doing afterwards.
In the YouTube channel itself, the I'm Sorry Wilson channel, I had started adding more blogs, more of my presence, more of my boyfriend, more of how I like, for example, a birth boyfriend tag that was a very YouTube, how is it called? Like a YouTube video in itself. Like it was a famous type of video in YouTube. The boyfriend tag, the friend tag, and I showed my LGBT friends, I show my boyfriend. So I added more of that, even though I still was creating things like what a Dominican girlfriend is like for the rest of the world. But for the LGBT people, I was adding that type of content.
Did you get feedback from viewers? Like, I know you mentioned that there, some sponsors were like maybe uncomfortable about it. How did people who are watching feel?
I don't know why. Well, I think I know why. I don't know exactly why. I've always had the benefit of not having to deal with a lot of negative feedback from people. I don't know if it's because of the people that surround me, or that I try to be with, or the styling of my content that draws in people that are mostly intention that their intention is mostly to benefit with a comment than to bully or say something negative. So I, being completely honest, I did not receive a lot of backlash or bullying or bad comments. But you could see, and it's normal, I understand why. You could see that the LGBT-centric topics were not as viewed as the other general or more, not even heterocentric, but general subjects that you could connect with if you were not part of the LGBT. And as I mentioned, in DR, it's very, if I don't mention it in, if I don't mention it, it's not happening. People just ignore it mostly, at least at that time. Because now in the internet at this day and age, since we're replicating a lot of United States behaviors, it's more vocal. People are more like, it's easier for them to say that they don't like it or they hate certain type of content.
Did you feel tempted with a negative response to be like, okay, maybe I won't talk about myself?
No, not at all. Because and it was only because I was already in my 20s. I was already with my boyfriend. I was already out with my family. I had a very supportive background of friends. I had it good. I was very, very lucky, as I mentioned a lot in this podcast. For me at that time, that was not an option. Actually, it was that not of an option that after I stopped creating videos for YouTube, because in the end I was worn out. I didn't want to continue. What I did was start the video podcast with my husband about LGBT-centric issues, mostly. So it was like a double down on the premise that I was going to talk about LGBT issues.
Can you tell me about how you met your partner?
We met at college. We met at college, I think, in 2006, and we took a photography class together, and we had to. I think we didn't have to have pairs. Like, we didn't have to pair with two people, but we did decided to do it because we lived close by also. So we were like, we met at this photography class, and then we talked about where we lived, and we were like, oh, but we live together. Why don't we just go and make the practice together? And that's how we started. He had a girlfriend at the time. I was trying to have a girlfriend at the time, so it was kind of messy. But we like hung out with each other for about a year, and we played a lot of online games, and I spent a lot of time at his house. And I was very, very sad around that time because I was not actually out yet with either my family or my friends. I was living my homosexual life. Don't think I wasn't, but I was not out. So he saw my sadness and with having to spend a lot of time with me. And one day he asked me, "You're going through something," he told me, and I was like, "Yes." "And you don't want to talk about it?" I was like, "Exactly." And he was like, "Can I at least ask what it is?" And I said, "Ask." And he was like, "Are you gay?" And I was like, "Yes." And he was like, "I think I might be bisexual." And after that day, everything changed. We started talking a lot more about those topics. We felt very safe. We felt very happy we had each other. I stopped trying to get with a girlfriend. He broke up the relationship with his girlfriend, and we actually, like a month after that, we started a relationship, and we've been together for 14 years, 14 years and a half.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Were there things that you shared, like it shared interests, stuff that made you feel like, oh, he has the same taste and he likes the same things I do?
Yes, the online game was actually called Maple Story. It's a very bubbly MMRPG, I think it's called, a multiplayer online game. It was Maple Story, and we had that connection. But we also share a lot of TV shows and movies that we liked. For example, he loves to paint and draw. He's a painter, and he liked a lot of TV shows. When I was growing up, I grew up with Cartoon Network a lot. And the Cartoon Fridays, I saw them like every Friday. I saw the new episodes of Dexter's Laboratory, Courage the Cowardly Dog, Johnny Bravo, Ed, Edd n Eddy, The Powerpuff Girls, Cow and Chicken, Samurai Jack, and he also was very connected to those shows, even though they had not like LGBT representation, at least not positively. They were very queer coded, some of them. And actually, it has representation, but in a very negative way. if we see it in through today's lens, for example, Count Chicken had this devil character that always was showing his ass, and he was very flamboyant. And the Powerpuff Girls, the main bad guy, it was called him, but it was this very feminine lobster, also red, just like the Count Chicken devil character, also red and very devil-like. So we did not have like that good of a representation that we could connect with, but we did have one, and it was those TV shows. He did grow up with Buffy. I did not. He loved Buffy, and Buffy had a very queer representation, a very like outspoken queer representation with Willow, a character that came out as lesbian in the show, and for the time it was very forward at the time. I did see the show complete like all the seasons this year, sorry, because of his recommendation, and I was very happy I did. I was very happy I did. But that also Angels in America was a show that we connected with. Angels in America and HBO is an excellent masterpiece of a show centered around the AIDS epidemic, and with a lot of great actors playing multiple parts throughout the show itself. And it's also based in a play, if I'm not mistaken. And it's very, very good.
Yeah, so I mean, those are such different things, like going from, Dexter's Lab to Buffy to Angels in America. If you step back and look at all that stuff, was there something that you were seeing in those things, or is there something they share that was exciting for you?
I think it was all being new for me. I knew in the way that, as you mentioned with Will and Grace, it was about these two guys in New York living a life so open and so different that for me it was amazing. It happened. It was the same feeling with Buffy or Angels in America. Even Angels in America, it's before I was born. It takes place before I was born. I felt like it was a different place that could be someday where I lived or where I could express myself the same as those characters. Even though I've never, being completely honest with you, I never want to leave this country. I feel really good here. I really love my people. I really love my family. And I really love the land itself, the mountains, the beaches. It's all very beautiful and comforting for me. Even though I don't want to leave ever, it feels good to see all these different places, these different cultures, and what you can achieve if you letting a little bit of openness and all that into your society.
Yeah, it sounds like a big part of this was having places where you could envision yourself.
Yes, exactly. And for example, I it comes to my mind now that we're talking about like different and very open places. A book called "I Am Not Myself These Days" is a memoir by Josh Kilmer Purcell, and if I'm not mistaken, he's a drag queen. Yes, it's a long time that I read this book, but he's a drag queen that has like two bubbles in the as breasts, and it has fish inside the breasts itself. So and it's this 6'2" drag white guy, that giant white guy that had a relationship with an escort, and it's very troublesome and traumatic for both of them, but it's so different from what ever I was experiencing at that time of my life that it really resonated with me. It was very, very good.
Yeah, I'm totally unfamiliar with that.
Yeah, it's a very good book. I'm just so you have it in your radar. It's "I Am Not Myself These Days" by Josh Kilmer Purcell, and I came across this book because Tyler Oakley, a YouTuber that at my time it was an inspiration for me to start my own YouTube channel, recommended it. But it was it's for I think it's for adults. If I'm not mistaken, obviously I read it in my teenage years. I think in my 19 years, but it's very, very good. It's very entertaining.
Do you find yourself, now that you're living in this new place with land that is yours and envisioning the future and building a house, have there been things that inspired you to do that? Like, I'm thinking of all these different pieces of media where you could see yourself. Were there pieces of media where you saw yourself that have now informed the life that you're leading?
I can remember Modern Family. It's a TV show that, even though it came in like around 2009, it's not that exactly that old or that could shape me that much. Seeing finally media representation of a family of two gay guys having children and in a positive way, or more positive than 6 Feet Under, that was very dark and gruesome. Seeing that show, Modern Family, really connected with me in the with the idea that having a place, settling, it was something that you could have in mind, even though you maybe don't make it at the moment or right now, but to have it in the top of your head. So I think that's one. Yeah, Cameron and Mitchell are my the openly gay family are my connection with all that settling down and all that part of the show.
Yeah, Modern Family often gets a little bit of criticism because that gay
Yes.
couple is so I mean, for lack of any other word, normal. They're suburban and they're just like the other
Yes,
straight
yes, yes.
couples, and they're not particularly radical or even that political most of the time. But I do think there is something kind of subversive and sly and political and radical about seeing a gay couple being treated, especially at that time, with exactly as much weight and importance in the story as the straight couples.
Exactly. Because I think an important part of the progress that we've made as a collective, as an LGBT collective, it's showing straight people that mostly or in general shape the laws of our countries in general, that this is normal. So showing them that lens, that view, content that they can consume or that they feel comfortable consuming, even though it might put us in a box or restrict us in some ways, it helps start the conversation. Remember when I tell you that at my youth, that conversation was not happening at all? Things like this do help to make that happen, even though it's not as greatly received as it should or as people would like to. I did remember Schitt's Creek. I don't know if you've heard it,
Oh
but
yeah, sure.
Schitt's Creek, it yeah I, that show also like cemented my idea of having moving to a small town full of very loving people and very small town, and that helped me a lot to visualize that and be comfortable around that idea.
Yeah, it's great to have those pieces of media that really helps you envision what you want for yourself and to feel like, okay, I can expect that. It's not unreasonable for me to expect to have what I want.
Yes, exactly.
So I know you've got the podcast now, Wilferland. Tell me how that got started and what you do on the podcast.
The podcast Wolferland started in a place where I was very disconnected from my personal YouTube channel. I'm sorry, Wilson. I stopped creating content for a while, and I was feeling a little bit disconnected with everything. But a very now good friend of mine, at the moment I didn't know him, he approached me and he told me, and I don't know if it's relevant, but he's a straight guy, so I'm very happy that he saw this. But he told me, Wilson, I've seen your work. I think it's missing that you continue creating. So I want to produce things for you, and you just have to be here and be a talent and talk. My idea is to have a podcast with you, and I want you in a podcast. And I said, wait, give me a second, because I'm not in the moment. I'm not in the state of mind to create a podcast for me. But let me talk it through with Fernando to see what he thinks, if he's willing to be with me. And he was. Lucky for me, he was. He's not a very social person. He's not a very TV-centric, YouTube-centric, or radio-centric person. But he saw the potential in creating something that spoke to the community that we didn't have as teenagers growing up. And he was on board. And it took me by surprise, but we did it. So with the help of that producer and with the positive feedback of Fernando, and we got along and we started a podcast in which every week we interviewed someone from the community in the Dominican Republic, or not itself someone from the community, but for example, psychologists that could open our eyes to subjects in regards to the community, or could help people come out of the closet, be more connected with their sexuality. Or how to navigate being LGBT with parents and all that. And it all started around that premise. And we have now 4 years doing it. I think almost five. And we are not planning to stop anytime soon.
What are some of the recent episodes that you're really proud of?
For example, I'm going to mention a very old episode. It's called Sexual Education, if I'm not mistaken, that really brought up the conversation in regards to what's happening to sexual education in schools here in the Dominican Republic, why it's not happening, why it's so limited, who's stopping it, and all that. And it really showed me also that there's intersex people in the art. There's a very big intersex community in a specific part of the country that has been studied for years from the international community that I didn't know about. And that's an old episode, a very good one. But recently, like a 3 weeks ago episode, we had this couple of lesbians that have been together for, I think, 21 years, if I'm not mistaken. And to see that representation of LGBT couples in DR for me and for Fernando and for the public, because it was very well received, it was very, very amazing for lack of a better word, to see that we don't often see that in our day to day, but it's there. It has been there for 20 years, for more than 20 years, and we take it for granted. We don't actually include it in our conversations in the day to day as a society, as in the laws itself. That couple of lesbians have been married 3 times, if I'm not mistaken, because they got married in the country of one of them, because one of them is not from here. They got married initially when it was the civil rights movement approved it, then when it was legal itself, and then another time that they decided to make another party for people that were not present in the first two ones. So it was beautiful. The sad part is that union in itself, it's still not legal in DR. Even though it's a recognized marriage outside of the country, it's not here, and that's sad. But it also brings up that conversation that how come any straight couple in the world can get married and comes here and their marriage is recognized? And when it's a LGBT couple, even though it's legal in a specific country, it's not recognized here. It's preposterous. So it brought that conversation again to the table. So I'm very happy for it.
Do you get different feedback now when you're doing the podcast? When you hear from listeners, is that different from when you were making the YouTube videos?
Yes. I even have like different group of people followers, because I still have people that try to make me go back to the YouTube videos that they initially connected with me. And there's people that actually prefer this kind of format, new format. So yes, it's different, the feedback. Luckily for me, and I don't even think if it's that lucky. I don't know. I'm biased, but I'm gonna repeat it. I repeat it. Luckily for me, I still have the good feedback, and if it's bad feedback, it's constructive, not criticism. So I'm in a very good place still with the content I'm creating. It's certainly more smaller public now because it's a very niche demographic now. But I'm still happy with what I'm creating, even if it's re if it reaches or changes one person at a time. I'm happy with it. I'm very happy with it.
So if people want to check out the podcast and follow you online, where should they go?
They should go. I recommend YouTube, so they see the video podcast format. But if they prefer any other place where they consume podcasts, it's all only writing Wilferland. Wilferland for Wilson, Fernando, and Land, because we have that special place of land in which we sit, don't judge, and talk about everything every time we gather with someone.
Fantastic. Well, Wilson, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me. I was very worried. I was not gonna speak that much, or I was gonna get shy, but luckily you took everything out of me. Thank you.
Thanks to Wilson for joining me. Thanks to you for listening. And thanks to everybody who makes the Sewers of Paris possible on Patreon. Head over to patreon.com/MattBaum to support the podcast and get backer rewards like weekly bonus videos and a care pack in the mail. Check out my new book, Hi Honey, I'm Homo, for a history of queer characters on American sitcoms. Visit my YouTube channel for stories from behind the scenes of iconic pop culture. Join me for weekly live streams every Sunday on Twitch, and keep up with even more of my work through my weekly newsletter. You can find all that and more at mattbaum.com. The theme song for The Sewers of Paris is Parisian from filmmusic.io by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com, licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 4.0. And until next time, croissant.